Hello, everyone, and welcome to Teach Me Teacher, a podcast for educators, where we, the teachers, become students ourselves. I'm your host, Jacob Chastain, and today we are talking about recovering from a tough year. All right, guys, I'm sitting here with a fabulous, fabulous teacher, Mrs. West. How are we doing today, Mrs. West?
I'm good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It is Friday. I feel like all my podcasts are done on a Friday now, which the last few have. So, me and you, correct me if I'm wrong, but we started at Richland Middle School at the same time, right?
Yeah, we did.
3 years ago.
3 years ago.
It's been a wild ride.
It's been a wild ride.
It's been good. We have some ups and downs. I think me and you, the reason I wanted to do this episode is because I think me and you shared some of similar experiences with our first year teachers. Maybe a little bit different in terms of our responses, I guess, to what was going on, but I think we had some of the similar experiences. So this episode, you know, is really for anyone who might be struggling through their teaching year because, as you know, we've only been teaching for 3 years, but I talk to veteran teachers all the time, and they're like, you know, every once in a while you have those years where you have those, it's just the group of kids for whatever reason, it doesn't gel right. Sometimes you have bad years. So that's what we're going to be talking about today and how we kind of overcame that and how you overcame it and became the rock star teacher that you are today. So before we go any further, I want you to tell us a little bit. Why did you become a teacher and how did that lead to you starting at Richland Middle School for your first year?
When I was in high school, I took an early childhood development class where I learned about early childhood development.
Yes.
Mind-blowing. And so from there, I decided that I wanted to go into elementary education. So when I went to college, my degree was elementary education, and my advisor pushed me to change it to middle school because he said there was more of a market there. So I switched to middle grades math and science. I got a job at Richland Middle. The principal at the time came to the career fair at the college that I was at and asked me for an interview.
Career fair?
Yeah.
Were you at the same one as Ha?
Probably.
Melissa Ha?
I was in her interview. Yeah? We interviewed together, yeah.
Man, because y'all were friends before?
No, we met at our interview. We were actually interviewing for the same job. And then afterwards, like a couple weeks later, I called the principal and said, like, hey, I was just wondering if, you know, you were thinking that there might be a job opportunity. And then she had offered me a different position in science. And from there, Melissa had texted me and said, hey, I noticed that we're both going to work at the same school. Do you think you might want to live together? And I said, yeah. So we did.
That sounds like a whole different podcast that we could go into about how that relationship blossomed.
Yeah.
But the fair is interesting because that was an experience I didn't have, but it was also, we talked about it on her episode. She gave us some details, so I won't ask you too much about the fair. So your first year started. Did you know what subject you were going to teach?
I did. I knew I was going to teach 8th grade science.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Was that because you wanted to, or was that because what they told you you were going to do?
Well, so the initial job was 8th grade math, and then when I called her, she said, well, would you accept a science position? Because I told her I couldn't coach. And I said, yeah, I would like way prefer to teach science. So
yeah.
Yeah.
What was it about science that made you so comfortable?
I just think that you have more of an opportunity to do more hands-on things, and I think that's more fun. So
cool. So like you're better. So are you a hands-on learner? Is that kind of where your brain goes when you're trying to learn something?
Yes, I would say that.
Was there any specific part of science that you liked, or was it really all just how it's more hands-on learning rather than math, where it's practicing arithmetic and whatnot?
I kind of think it's all of it, really. We have 4 reporting categories that we like align to, and I really like all of them.
First year starts. You're in there. You are in it.
Yes.
How was your first day? Can you recall that day for us?
My first day. I don't know if I can remember my first day teaching, but I know that I was very nervous. I didn't sleep at all the night before, and I woke up, you know, 6 or 7 times thinking I was late. Stressful, I guess. I don't really remember specifically what happened.
I was freaking out.
Yeah.
Like, I still, every once in a while, wake up, and I'm like, it's really weird that I'm a teacher. Like, it's just a weird experience, especially if that's something, like, you've kind of been looking forward to, going to all these classes, and all of a sudden, you're in it.
Yeah.
And that's what the first, that's what, like, I guess the first year feels like is, man, they're putting me in this classroom. Like, I remember there was a specific time. I don't know if it was day one, but in my first week, I was sitting there, and I remember just looking at my students. I was talking to them, and I stopped. I was just looking at them. I was like, oh, they're listening to me. Like, I'm responsible for this group of kids. Yeah, and that was like a mind blow. I was at that, after that point, it was such a weird experience. So did you ever have a moment like that, or was it really just like hit the ground running and hoping for the best?
I can't recall. Sorry.
That's fine.
Lame answer. I don't know. Probably.
You're fine. So let's get kind of to the point of the podcast, which is rough years. So your first year, you've been pretty open about it. You know, I asked, you know, where you were comfortable talking about it, and you're like, sure. So what happened in that first year that really made it not the greatest of first experiences for the classroom? What was going on during your first year?
Well, I would say I was 22, mm-hmm. Teaching eighth graders, so they were physically a lot bigger than me, and I just think, like, emotionally, like, I wasn't ready to manage the class the way that I needed to manage the class. So I student taught in Caldwell, which is like a rural suburb from College Station. So where I student taught, I taught eighth grade, but it was just the demographic was a lot different and the kids were a lot different. And so when I came to this school, I think I was expecting it to be the exact same. And so I think I framed my classes to look like the classes where I had student taught. And when I got here, I realized that the kids here were very much different from where I had student taught. And I just don't think I had, like, the management tools to effectively run a classroom that year.
Management. Are you talking just straight up quiet signal? Are you talking about structures? What specifically were you not managing?
Yeah, literally everything. Like, all of it was bad. I don't know. I just didn't, like, follow through on anything that I said I was going to follow through on. No, I wouldn't say I had a strong quiet signal. I didn't wait for them to be listening before I started talking. I let a lot of things go that I shouldn't have, like, just everything. It was just bad.
Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of people in my room my first year, you know, watching me and helping me, and I had a great co-teacher who would, you know, we shared classes and stuff. And I don't remember who exactly said it, because I got so much first advice in that first year, but I had someone look at me and goes, Chastain, you can wait for them to be quiet before you talk. Like giving me the privilege to do that. And that's a really hard skill, right?
Yeah.
I mean, to have them, like, be quiet.
Yeah.
And it's even harder because what if, you know, I'm sure you've had this happen, but you get them quiet, you start talking, and they start talking again. And then what do? Like, in this first year, you would just keep going,
just
right?
Just keep talking. Yeah, louder.
Yeah, and that's... It's hilarious because we just do it naturally.
Yeah.
And for me, I have a loud voice. I'm a loud human being.
Uh-huh.
I get it from my family. So I tried to win the conversations with being louder.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't work.
Yeah.
But you have a different type of voice than me.
Yeah.
So I don't want to say you have a weak voice, but you have a very, what's the singing term for your type of voice? Not like a falsetto. You know what I mean?
Falsetto
is a little too high pitched.
Squeaky little mouse voice.
Yeah. So your voice is different. It's not necessarily what you would call a commanding voice, right? So how did you try to manage that first year? Did you even think about it, or what was going on, kind of in your room to where you were trying to manage all of these kids with your voice? Did you try to yell louder or try to talk softer to make them listen? What kind of skills did you have there?
I guess I would try to talk louder, and I would just do my quiet signal over and over and over again. I was like, all right, well, 5 more seconds. You better be quiet in 5 more seconds. Okay, 5 more seconds. This time I really need you to be quiet. You know, and I just keep asking them and asking them, and no result or response.
No result. So what did this make you, you know, I mean, obviously, this was, like, not the greatest experience, uh-huh. right? So what were you doing? You know, say Christmas hits.
Uh-huh.
What was going through your head, you know, during that long 2-week break? What was happening right when, you know, you get that break and you finally get to go home and relax? What was going through your head?
Well, I was looking for other jobs.
Okay.
It was nice to have the break, but I think I was very, I think I was thinking optimistically that when I came back, maybe some things could change around. But I think also I was just thinking, you know, maybe this isn't the career that I'm supposed to be in. Maybe, I don't know, maybe it's something else.
Yeah. So did you feel like everyone else was being successful but you? Like, did that, like, weird thought ever come into your head? Because some people, like, when they feel... the reason I ask that is because some people, when they... Like, they're getting kind of beat down every day. It's like, why... What am I not doing that other people are doing? Mm-hmm. Like, did that come up? Or were you just really like, man, I just suck?
Well, I do think so. My co-teacher that year was Elizabeth Kelly, mm-hmm. and she's a very strong teacher. And so I would say that it sometimes was hard to see her teach because was so successful. I was like, I think part of it too is I felt like I had to do every single thing that she did all the time, like all the exact same things that she was doing. And I'd watch her implement them, and she's a rock star, and they were so successful. And then I would try to do it, and they sucked. And yeah, so I would say that was a little bit of a downer, I guess.
I had my co-teacher, Melinda Bowles, we did a podcast with her. She was right across from me in the portable. She would do her lessons, and she's got, like, this mom aspect in the classroom to her kids. You know, they kind of, you know, rib her a little bit, but she controls them really well, like a mom would, mm-hmm. or a good mom would, I guess. Yeah. And it's just really weird to look like. And our first periods, eventually we combined them, so we kind of co-taught. Mm-hmm. And really what that meant was I was watching her teach, yeah. and then I would teach the rest of the day. And I would go into my room, and I remember just going to her room, too, and I'd be like, I don't know what you're doing. Yeah. I literally watched you for 45 minutes, and yeah. I try to do it in my room, and I have kids, like, you're not doing what they have you doing. It's weird when you watch someone who is kind of a master of their craft.
Yeah.
Or at least pretty, as close to a master as you can get. Mm-hmm. And it's just, why? I mean, that's a lot of skill. Your partner, how much did you rely on her that first year when it came to getting help? Did you only use her, or did you use other people?
Academically, 100%. She did absolutely everything, like very, very much. She did everything for me my first year. And then I did, you know, that year we had a lot of people in and out of our classroom. So I did have an academic coach that was helping me. Yeah, and then just our administration also.
Did you ever go, like, seek them out and be like, help me? Or did you just wait for them to kind of come to you?
No, I did at a certain point because I just had one class. I had a class where literally before it started, I would have panic attacks. Like, my hands would get sweaty. Like, I would just, like, feel myself start getting lightheaded because I knew, like, it was going to be such a train wreck. So, yeah, at that point, I was like, I need help. I need help from someone. Yeah.
By the end of the year, so skipping past Christmas.
Yeah.
You come back, uh-huh. kind of looking for other jobs. What's happening towards the end of the year? Were your classes getting better? Were you seeing results? Or was it really just kind of a hot mess until the end?
I would say at the very, very end of the year, things started to turn up a little bit. But pretty much aside from that, no, it was just rough.
So we know the ending of this story. You're still a teacher, right?
Yeah.
You didn't quit. You didn't go work at Nordstrom's or wherever. Wherever you decided to go.
Yeah.
So what happened? What changed that summer or the next year? What was this magic thing that changed you from hating your life, having panic attacks, to saying, mm-hmm. I'm not a good teacher, and then you're here 2 years later?
So I did look for other jobs, and so my husband is in medical school. So I thought for a while that I was going to have to move anyways because he was going to leave for his rotations. And so I was like set on it, like this is it, I'm done, we're moving, it doesn't matter, I'm going somewhere else. And that door kind of like a different door was open for him where we had the opportunity to stay here. So I really do think that like that was like God truly wanted me to come back to the school. Like I think my job here wasn't done yet and he knew that there were bigger and different things that were going to play out and that I needed to be here for them. So
you come back after summer, you're still here. How in the world did you start approaching your new class? What were some of the things that you were like, okay, I know I can do this, this, and this? Mm-hmm. What was going through your head when you were planning your new classroom for that second year? The retribution year. What was going on?
Well, the first thing that I did was I actually switched positions. So my first year I taught 8th grade. And then at the end of that year, I had asked the administration to switch to the 6th and 7th grade position that had been open. So I think I started out knowing, like, things are going to be different. This is a different grade. So I think that put me in kind of a positive mindset that things are going to be different. I think when I was planning out how I wanted to start that year, I read the B.D. Wong book, First Days of School, and I took a whole bunch of notes on it. Mm-hmm. And I decided going in that I was going to be a lot more firm on my management skills, and that was going to be some, you know, I was going to practice routines and procedures for that solid first week, and that was going to be my number one priority. So I think that that was a shift instead of trying to, like, quickly get into content, like, really taking the time to hammer out procedures and expectations.
So what were some of the steps you took for to hammer out those procedures? Where did you, was it just lecture hour? Did you do some structure games? I mean, what was going on to kind of set up these new expectations of for your new class?
So I switched my expectations to the whole brain teaching expectations that have kinesthetic symbols that go alongside them.
Mm-hmm.
So we practice those every day for the week, and the kids kind of like it. It's kind of fun. They're moving, but then it also then moving forward, anytime they're breaking that expectation, I can quickly just kind of do the little symbol, and they're like, oh, okay, yeah, you're right. I need to raise my hand if I want to say something, and I can just do the little symbol, and they know. I don't remember the second, what the part of the question was.
Well,
well,
before we go, I'll move on to the next half.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of these kinesthetic symbols.
Uh-huh.
Okay. First of all, what's kinesthetic symbol? Because not everyone knows for who's listening to the podcast. So just give us a quick definition of that.
It's just doing a body motion that relates to whatever the idea is that you're teaching.
Okay, so what are the main ideas that you taught them? And you know, I mean, you could do them right now, but no one's going to see them. But what were the main ideas and kind of what was going on?
For my expectations?
Yeah, that you use kinesthetic symbols for.
Uh-huh, so I have five. Follow directions quickly, raise your hand if you would like to speak, raise your hand if you want to leave your seat, come prepared and on time for class every day, and there's also a fifth one.
Somewhere.
I'm like doing them in my head, prepared on time for class each day. Oh, keep your hands, feet, and other objects to yourself.
See, look, the kinesthetic symbol helps
you
remember.
It helps me. It links it to my brain. Yeah. So those are the five that I had.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. How, I have to ask, because I don't do a lot of kinesthetic symbols because I've done them before and I do them every once in a while, but it's not one of my go-tos.
Mm-hmm.
What made you decide to do that, specifically for rules and procedures?
I honestly, I think I was on Pinterest one day, and something popped up about whole brain teaching, and I was like, oh, I'm going to watch this little video, and I watched it, and I was like, that's cool, you know, that's a neat idea. So I kind of tweaked it a little to fit my classroom, and then I just tried it, and my first year, the kids kind of picked up on it and seemed to like it, so I kept doing it.
I think it also, you know, the fact that you thought it was cool helps a little bit.
Yeah.
I think that at some point we hit on that every episode, which is, you know, if it's good for the teacher, 9 times out of 10 it's going to be good for the student.
Uh-huh.
So you feel more confident. You're doing these kinesthetic symbols.
Yeah.
You're teaching them your rules and procedures. Did you find that, you know, you said you could remind them mm-hmm. pretty easy, you know, if they're doing something, you do your little hand mm-hmm. motion. Did you find that your behavior issues went down with that simple piece?
I think so. And I think holding them accountable for actually, if they're not following. So I try to make them very, like, explicit. Like, you can easily tell if your hands are not to yourself. You can easily tell if you're out of your seat and you haven't asked to be out of your seat. So I think having the symbols and then holding them accountable for them when they're not doing them, yeah, I think it helped.
Are these the same ones you used this year?
Yeah.
A year after that?
Uh-huh.
So you kept it.
Yes.
It was so good it lasted.
It did last.
That's rare. Seriously, because we cast out so much stuff, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you did your kinesthetic symbols. What else did you really decide to hit on in order to get your classroom management under control?
I try to be very explicit in my directions, just procedures in general. I post them on the board where kids can see them, model them, go over them. Because I think the first year, part of where things really fell apart was I was expecting them that I could say something one time quickly and they would 100% of the class would hear it and know what to do and do it. And I think that was unrealistic. So I think being a lot more explicit and posting my directions also helped to cut down on behavior problems.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably worth a point in and of itself, because that first year, you know, I remember, you know, I taught 8th grade in my first year like you, but we, you know, we got thrown in there, and the weirdest part about teaching is understanding what kids' brains do.
Yeah.
And what they're capable of. And that's a really hard thing to get, because you can't read it in a book.
Yeah.
Right? You can't learn it in a class. It's mm-hmm. something you literally have to experience over and over and over again in order to be like, you know what? My kids probably can't do that. They need this scaffolding. Right?
Yeah. Yes.
And that, I mean, that's, that can't be highlighted more enough, because I taught 8th grade and I taught 6th grade. Going to 6th grade, I still had the same issue.
Yeah.
I didn't know, you know, I could look at a 6th grade piece and be like, oh, well, this says it's for 6th graders.
Mm-hmm.
It says the 6th grade level. Surely they can read it. And then they couldn't.
Yeah.
This year, I kind of know, you know, a little bit better than what they can read, and I've had way more success just by knowing that. So, moving on from your procedures, what kind of assignments were you doing? Were you doing more worksheets, or because you were doing your partner stuff, was it more interactive, and because of that interactivity, you couldn't control it? You know what I mean? Did that mm-hmm. question make sense?
Yeah. So I think it's fair to note that she was teaching pre-AP and I was teaching inclusion.
Okay.
So again, why did it make sense that I did everything that she did? It didn't, but I just felt like that's what I needed to do.
Yeah.
And it was a lot more reading heavy. And I did want to do, you know, the Kagan stuff, because we had just got back from that trip. And I was like, this is awesome. But again, like, anytime I tried to do an activity like that, I didn't have the management skills. So you're right. It was just, like, chaos. Like, as soon as I let them do something interactive, it was just, like, a bomb exploded.
All right, guys, we're going to move around the room.
Yeah, right. I'm like, okay, go back to your seats. Go back now.
Did you, at some point during your first year, did mm-hmm. you start deferring to, like, more simple assignments that would be, I guess, your standard the mill, you uh-huh. know, here's your paper or here's your notes or stuff like that? Or did you really try to blast out those interactive assignments all throughout the year?
No, I would say that it definitely turned more into worksheet activities for sure, because I was just drained and frustrated. And
so second year,
yeah,
did you start leaning back into interactive?
Second year, I got a little better. And then I'd say this year, like, I consciously at the start of the year decided, like, I'm not going to be a boring science teacher. Like, you don't learn science out of a book. That's not how I want to teach it anymore. You know, like, I want to do so much more stuff where you get to see it and actually, you know what I mean? Like, be a part of what's happening in that process, you know?
I'm interested to ask, so how many experiments did you do your first year?
I don't know, maybe 5 or 6, which is the TEKS. You're supposed to do 40% of your time as lab time. So I was not following my TEKS, but not a lot.
I mean, I imagine, because as a, you know, I haven't taught science, but when I was becoming a teacher, and now that I am a teacher, I think about, you know, I have like rules and procedures for like taking care of books, which is a fairly common thing. And I always figured that science, you know, when it comes to rules and procedures and keeping kids safe with mm-hmm. labs and, you know, making sure things don't break.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a lot of classroom management that you have to deal with.
Yeah.
How have you been approaching that this year and the last year to get everyone more involved and safe and all of that? Do you have specific procedures for each of them, or how does that work?
Yeah. So we do, when we do labs, depending on what type of lab it is, if it's like a lab at your table, everybody has a lab role. So I kind of switched those up this year to be things that seem like, because, you know, nobody wants to be like the trash picker-upper. So I kind of, right, like, great, that's my role today. So I kind of try to switch it up where everybody has something that's engaging, but also like mentally stimulating. Like, you actually have to think about the job that you're doing, but you know, like, I give them their role and then like a sound bite. Like, what are the things that you're saying? What should they sound like, I guess, to your group member? So I don't know if that answers the question that you're asking, but...
Yeah, I mean, it does, because you're using roles uh-huh. to divvy it up. From your experience, why do you think that works better with your kids rather than just saying, "All right, here you go. Here's your procedures. Don't do any of these things wrong." Why do the roles work better?
I think one, because you're always going to have that one kid who's like, "This is my lab now," right? Like, I'm going to do all the steps, you know, and then the one kid who puts their head down is like, I don't care if I get to do anything, you know. So I think it's more intentional when they have, and particularly if there is that one overachieving kid, then the kid that's putting their head down, maybe they're the, you know, the team leader or whatever, and they're kind of poking that kid saying, hey, you need to do your job too. So I think it gets everybody engaged in it. There's more accountability in it.
That's cool. Do you, that engagement's a pretty interesting point, because uh-huh. when you don't have classroom management, kids aren't engaged,
mm-hmm.
like ever.
Yeah.
You know, the kids yeah. that are, the kids that will be engaged, but, you know, yeah. most of your class isn't going to be.
Yeah.
So now that you've, you know, you're getting that classroom management down, what type of engagement are you getting from them? I mean, do you really get that electricity when kids are involved in it now? Do you see that happening?
Yeah, I would say there's a lot higher engagement, especially when we do things like labs. And I think they take it, instead of it just being like, oh, this is free time, like, we're doing a lab, I think that they are doing the things that they're supposed to be doing to get the lab done. So I would say they're engaged in the science rather than just talking for the heck of it.
Engaged in the science.
In the science.
What a great phrase. And gets like engaged in the learning, yeah. or give them the learning. It's one of those, that's a book right there. That's right there. Now, your partner has changed.
Yes.
As well. Uh-huh. And we're gonna have a partner podcast eventually, but I'm curious, because you did, you know, you relied, just like I did, uh-huh. my first year, on that partner.
Yeah.
Can't speak highly enough of co-teachers.
Yeah.
First year.
Yeah.
But how's that relationship working with now? Do you find that you guys have fallen to certain roles? Are mm-hmm. you still using, are you still like, you know, he's your guiding person? Or uh-huh. how does that relationship work right now that you've developed as a teacher yeah. a lot more?
So I have two co-teachers, one for 6 and one for 7.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I think I do continue to lean very heavily on them because they've both done it longer than I have. But yeah, it's really great. So I would say that for 7th grade, Tony always has really excellent activities, you know, things that he's done, things that he knows are successful. So we can sit down and look at them together. And then he says I'm the fluffer. So I add in like the extra little stuff, right? So he like comes with like the meat of the lesson, and then we can kind of tweak it. And from there, like build something that's going to.
So what, when you're looking at a lesson plan,
uh-huh.
what's going through your head that makes you the fluffer? Like, what do you, yeah. Like, I mean, I imagine, well, first of all, let's define the
yeah,
fluffer.
Yeah, I feel like that makes me sound very insignificant. Fluff things, right? Pontificator. I think so. So we go through and we make a PowerPoint. Every day we have a PowerPoint of the things that we're going to do. It sounds like very old school, but I don't know. It's the best way that we have to like make sure that we're hitting all the things that we need to hit.
Yeah, totally.
So I think particularly because, again, this year I teach the inclusion classes, I go back in and I make sure that, like, all of the directions are very explicit and succinct and, like, things that I think will make sense for, like, my English language learners and my special education students. And then I go in and I add pictures and visual clues and kinesthetic symbols and things that I feel like are going to amp up the comprehension.
So is that a natural thing for you to do, or did this come from training and reading about it? Like, where did this come from? Because a lot of teachers don't do that naturally.
Yeah, no, I don't. I think this year, like, I've really had to grow in it, because this year, like, I think I've been very, like, cognizant of my special education students and particularly my English language learning students. So no, I don't think comes naturally. And I have gone to some professional developments, but that's somewhere that I think it'd be cool to continue to learn.
That's crazy. I mean, it's good. It's to me, it's crazy that, like, you just kind of naturally, you know, you've had training on it, but uh-huh. you're very aware. Like, because I run a lot of stuff off PowerPoint too.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, every time I listen to someone say, hey, you know, put a picture here,
yeah.
like, it blows my mind every single time. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Duh. Why? Like, that just makes sense. So with your partner,
uh-huh.
right,
uh-huh.
do you, when you're taking the lesson, when y'all are planning it together, or when he brings the meat of it,
uh-huh.
do you ever just kind of do the same thing? Or do you, once it goes into your room, that lesson changes a little bit for your style?
Yeah, I think it definitely, I mean, we like, at the essence of the lesson, do the same thing. But yeah, we differentiate it a lot, especially because, again, like, he primarily teaches pre-AP and I primarily teach inclusion, so.
Just kind of break it up.
Yeah. I do some things different, for sure. Obviously, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, That's a quality point because, I mean, do you feel safer now, like, changing stuff? Because that first year, it's like, it has to be this lesson. It has to look like this. We have to use the same technology.
Yeah.
But are you more comfortable, like, oh, well, that's not going to work for me. I'm going to change it here.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think that both this Jessica and Tony are super, like, obviously, we're not the same teacher. Like, we're going to do things different. Like, there's some things that, you know, I do, and Tony's like, I'm not going to do that, you know? And then there's some things that he's, like, very passionate about, and I'm like, I don't, that's not me, you know?
Yeah.
So I think we have a good relationship in that aspect.
I think that's a really, that's a key for any healthy kind of partnership, just because, I mean, people are different.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I'm a weirdo. So, you know, my partner, like, she's going to look at the stuff I'm doing and go, all right. You can do that. We're going to go do this. But it's okay because we're hitting, as long as we're on the same standards, we're teaching the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, we just have our styles, what we're comfortable in.
Yeah.
But how do you feel like a style starting to come out now that you've gotten your feet wet, you've gotten some confidence built back into your system?
Yeah.
Do you feel like you have a style that's kind of emerging into your teaching?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah? What would your style be if you could tell me? The, like, just a typical lesson in your class. What are kids experiencing? What's something that you do that is a part of your style?
I think
it's a big question.
I think that I try to, like, bring a lot of energy for myself. I try to, like, be very personally bought in to the things that we're doing, and I think that's made a difference. I think I try to give them a lot of relevance because I think, particularly science, like, you know, super cool, super engaging. So I try to build a lot of relevance for them. And then I think that, I guess, my style, I try as often as possible to do activities where you're moving and you're talking and you're thinking, but you're, you know, like your body's up and moving. Because I think I have a hard time sitting down in a staff meeting for an hour. So I try really hard to stay away from, like, 30 minutes of notes or, like, 30 minutes of book work or something. I try to give them a lot of opportunities to get up and move and still be engaged in content, but also moving.
Yeah. I have an interesting question, you know, kind of merging your past first year to what you're doing now.
Uh-huh.
I remember, you know, for just my personal experience, when I was teaching my content for the first time, you know, it's almost like relearning it. It's not that you don't know it, but in order to teach something, I mean, you have to own it. So I did history my first year. So I was like, okay, what? All right, dates, you know, I had to remember, you know, re-jog my mind. So content wise, you know, we talked about classroom management, but when it came to teaching your content, what were some of the struggles that you had, that first year when it came to, really mastering it? Did you have to stay up and, like, just study it all the time, or what was going on in order to get that content into the lesson?
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Cause moving from 6th to 8th grade in science, like, it's out of control. Like, the sixth grade things are so basic, and you know, like, I think you can dive really deep into them, but to master them, they're, like, pretty surface level. And then for 8th grade, they're insane. Like, there's, like, 95 words in them, and you have to be able to do 15 different things, and, like, know all these vocabulary. So did I stay up all night and master them? Sometimes did I not really know what I was talking about? Yes, you know, like, I probably could have done a little better with that, but man, I feel for those 8th grade kids. They have to know so much.
Yeah. And the teachers. I mean, there are people that are going to listen to this, and they're going to feel like they're the only person that's had that experience. And we're here to tell them.
They're not.
It's okay. I mean, figure it out. Because, I mean, kids only have one 8th grade. Well, most kids only have one 8th grade class. But, you know, it's rough.
Yeah.
And it's rough to feel like you're that teacher
that
is just kind of like floating through, hoping for the best.
Yeah.
I don't really, you know, I have this content up here, you know, hopefully it's great. But so do you, when you move to 6th grade, you know, you mentioned that the standard's a little bit easier, but was there still that learning curve for that first, when you're first diving back into it?
I think it was, so moving to 6th grade was a lot easier because 6th and 8th grade, like, tie in really, really nicely with one another. So I had kind of learned the beefed up version, so it was a little bit easier for that. But 7th grade is, like, completely different from 6th grade and 8th grade. Like, everything is completely different. So, yeah, that was difficult because it was a lot of life science, and that's not something I'm strong at anyways.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that I had to relearn a lot of.
So, Sixth and seventh grade, did you do that last year too?
I did.
So you got to reteach your content this year for the first time.
Yeah, it's been very nice.
It is, isn't really it?
Nice.
Man, yeah. Shout out to Whitfield for doing that for both of us. Because I felt so much better this year.
Oh, absolutely.
I felt confident last year because I really love ELA. Mm-hmm. But it was, I mean, I still had, it was learning what a unit is. Or not what a unit is, but, you know, what a unit looks like, you know, in this.
Yeah.
How long it should take or what are some of the pitfalls.
Yeah.
And this year, you know, I'm interested to see if you have the same experience. When I was lesson planning, you know, I was like, oh, you know what, we struggled with that.
Yeah.
So, you know, scaffold early, that way we don't do that. Have you done the same thing?
Yeah, you actually knew. You could look back and be like, this is something that I did last year and I can actually do the exact same thing if I want to. Yeah.
It's amazing.
It makes it a lot easier.
Changes the life.
It changes the life.
The life. I do have, I try to end every episode on advice from you guys because everyone has different advice. Everyone has different experiences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not experts at Teach Me Teacher, but we try to highlight experiences because that's what we connect to in the end, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you, I mean, people have rough years. I said this at the beginning of the podcast. Yeah. Veteran teachers have rough years. Veteran teachers have rough classes. Yeah. Walk through any school, they're going to tell you that they're, you know, there's a class that makes them wave their white flag.
Yeah.
There's a new teacher that feels like they're just sucking the life out of everything and like they can't do anything right. You know, and they're just, there's so much stress that goes into that. So your experience to them, talking directly to them, what would you say to that person that was feeling like you and me that first year?
I mean, just to stick it out, like every year things have gotten better. You know, if I would have left after that first year, even if I had gone to a different school after that first year, like, I mean, I'm sure you feel this way too. Like, how much would we have missed out, you know, on these last 2 years? How great have these last 2 years been? And we would have missed all of that, you know, because we had one bad year.
Yeah.
I would also say to continue to find ways that your students learn, because I think I thought that I could teach how I learned. But when I started teaching my kids how they learned best, things really started to turn around because they were engaged and they wanted to be a part of our class. So I don't know, stick it out. Don't quit.
Stick it out. Don't quit.
Don't give up. Even if you have to cry sometimes, it's okay. Just get a little piece of chocolate and watch your shows and have a glass of wine and then come back to school the next day and the next day and the next day, even if it feels like difficult.
Yeah. I mean, I had days. Find your crying place, I guess. Yeah. If you're a crier.
Find your crying place.
I mean, Melissa Haw, she was like, I cried in the kitchen. That's where I cried. Like, that's her place. We'll have a special segment on this podcast eventually where it's like, where do you cry?
Where do you cry? Yeah. What food do you go and eat when you just feel terrible about yourself?
How many calories do you consume on a hard day? That's hilarious. Anyway, thank you, Mrs. West, for being here on Teach Me Teacher. I know for a fact that your episode is going to help people because there are teachers out there that are feeling down. They're feeling stressed about all this stuff. So hearing us laugh about our terrible first year hopefully will make some people feel a little bit better. So thank you for being here. I really do appreciate it, especially on a Friday.
Thanks.
For everyone else, go to teachmeteacherpodcast.com where you can get everything we've ever done right there on the interwebs. Go to iTunes, subscribe, hit that rating button, the 5-star, because it was a 5-star episode. Share it on Facebook. Do everything you need to do. And remember, share this with your team. Have a good one.